Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Kernels. I'm Christopher Hume, I'm culture editor at The Independent, and I'm here with Jacob Stallworthy.
Hello.
And Jack Shepherd.
Hello.
It's been a busy week, guys. A lot of screenings going on.
Busy week.
Yeah, we had Blade Runner Monday night, which we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
You guys saw Last Flag Flying, the new Linklater film last night.
Yep, which I absolutely loved. Which I'm seeming to be in a weird minority.
Yeah, the reviews haven't been great. I was in the middle ground, but you definitely...
I mean, I'm a Linklater boy. I think everyone's got that one filmmaker where they could just... You feel like they make films for you. And you know you're going to love it the minute you walk into the cinema, and he's one of them for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm excited for it. Yeah. I'm going to see Call Me By Your Name tonight, which...
Best Picture front runner.
Yeah.
I'm going to see Molly's...
Guadagnino, who did A Bigger Splash, one of my favourite films last year. So good.
I'm seeing Molly's Game, which is the Aaron Sorkin's directorial debut. And Jessica Chastain, it's like a poker thriller.
That's so Sorkin, isn't
it? I know.
Like
poker. Apparently the script, which is like, I mean, it's an absolute doorstopper.
Yeah. And
how long is the film?
It's 2 hours 20, but apparently it's like got like way more pages than a film that length should be. But Jessica Chastain's been touted for Best Actress nomination for it, so I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. And then tomorrow, I'm seeing A Killing of a Sacred Deer, which you're doing an interview with the director for.
Yorgos Lanthimos, hoping to do an interview with him. It would be so interesting to talk to.
Yeah. And then hopefully we're seeing Three Billboards.
Three Billboards tomorrow as well.
Yeah, we should be good.
I'm really excited for Toronto.
Yeah. Director Martin McDonagh, who did In Bruges, which was excellent. Seven Psychopaths, which was interesting.
It's pretty great. I think you're going to really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited.
It's crazy. I feel like for the whole of the year we've been saying, oh, there's just like no good films around this year at all. Like, what is even going to be at the Oscars? And then at the moment, I mean, none of these films are necessarily coming out yet, but there's just a glut of them being pushed. And with London Film Festival around the corner, just so many being talked about and being screened at the moment.
Yeah. Like the last 2 weeks, I've seen Death of Stalin, Killing of a Sacred Deer, and The Shape of Water, which have all been pretty much like 5-star films for me. And it's just, they've all come at once. And Blade Runner, which is amazing. So,
yeah. So, yeah, talking about Blade Runner 2049, we all saw that on Monday night. For me, it was like, apart from Song to Song, which I think I've spoken about on the podcast before, it was like the second most moving experience I think I've had in the cinema this year. Like, and I think what I really loved about it as well is like, it's good when you expect to be a big fan of a film and then you are and it's everything you wanted it to be. But I arguably think it's even nicer when you're not necessarily expecting that much from a film and it blows you away. Because like, I was never a huge Blade Runner fan. I always appreciated the aesthetic, but the film didn't massively do it for me. So going into this, I was like, oh, I'm not sure what to expect. And it just blew me away. Like, it's just from start to finish, it's just an unbelievably impressive piece of like visual art.
Mm-hmm.
What were your guys' like initial reactions when you were like sat there in the cinema?
I was completely blown away by it. I'm a big fan of the first one. Even though it's quite slow, I still really enjoy it. I think it's a really, really great sci-fi masterpiece. But this one was arguably better. It looks amazing, and coming out I couldn't stop thinking about it. The visuals are stunning all the way through.
I feel like I wanted to stand up and applaud during it. Like, it's that kind of a film.
Yeah, it's amazing that they even had that huge budget given to this film. It's crazy. It's completely unheard of, really.
Jacob, what do you think?
I mean, I've got a confession to make. I do enjoy the first Blade Runner, but I've just always been kind of have a block with the plot of Blade Runner. And I always find it a really hard film to recount. But I can absolutely just buy into the world that Ridley Scott built and just admire it for that. And I think it's basically Denis Villeneuve has done that again with this, but to just an unbelievable degree, in that I think the plot is absolutely mental and I just don't even know what was really happening, but I was transfixed the entire way through.
Exactly.
And it was ridiculous. And every time, every new shot There's about a million things to look at, so you'll want to watch it a million more times. And when you come out of the cinema and, you know, a 2 hour, 45 minute long film and you immediately want to see it again, it's no bad thing, right?
Yeah. I think we all came out thinking that went very quickly.
Yeah.
Like, I completely forgot how long it was. I thought when they reached the end, I thought there was going to be another hour or so, but... Mm.
It just kind of washes over you. And speaking about your point about the plot, yeah, I found it very convoluted and intricate as well. And it sounds kind of a weird thing to say about a film, but it is that kind of film where it doesn't matter that much. Like, I was just, it's such a tonal and atmospheric piece. It's like, if you go and see a ballet, you're not like thinking about the story of the Nutcracker. You're like enjoying everything else about every other aspect of it. And that's what I felt like watching Blade Runner. Just the amount of atmosphere it creates and the shots and like the world they've produced was just like... incredible.
It's staggering, really. And I think obviously the music helped.
Yeah,
just you'll be wanting to rave all night long to the soundtrack, really. And it's just, I think the plot, it reminded me of, it was like almost like a simple noir film. This guy's search for answers in this murky world. It reminded me weirdly of Chinatown, and I thought other people might have picked up on this as well and like mentioned on Twitter or written an article or two about it, but no one seems to have kind of made that analogy. But it really just reminded me of the Roman Polanski film Chinatown.
See, for me I was thinking of Apocalypse Now for some reason, just in the sense of like you go into that film expecting, oh, it's a war film, there's going to be a ton of shooting, and then you have this really weird, slow whole section at the end where people crawling up from mud and Marlon Brando and stuff. And it was kind of like that, in that it was a sci-fi, but it was just so like brooding and like surrealist and very slow paced, but like in an enjoyable way, not like slow, difficult to get through kind of way.
I thought the plot of this one was much stronger than the first one. Mm. I'm not sure if we're going to talk spoilers. Probably avoid them.
Let's probably avoid them for now.
Yeah, it was good. Like, following Ryan Gosling's character, he's always quite magnetic on screen, even though he's perhaps not doing a whole lot of acting. He seems to just be Ryan Gosling every time.
What? I disagree with that.
I think
I really rate him, and I think he's the guy who his thing is understated, but I think it's crafted understated. Like, I think he's really good.
I think he reminded me of Harrison Ford, because when Harrison Ford first did Blade Runner, everyone was used to seeing him in Indiana Jones and Star Wars as this semi grumpy guy. And then Blade Runner came out and he was exactly the same, except for he wasn't the good guy. He was this kind of bad guy, like an anti-hero. And here it was, we're used to seeing Ryan Gosling as the semi-grumpy guy who saved Jazz. And then he was a semi-grumpy guy again in it. So, I don't know.
I'm with Chris on this one. I think, like, I'm ever impressed with Ryan Gosling, really. I've not always enjoyed him as an actor, but in recent years, I've kind of come to really appreciate how much emotion he can pack in just a facial expression. Mm. There's a scene in Blade Runner in which the camera is held on him for way longer than it should be, where he kind of makes a discovery, and you're not even really sure what this discovery means, but you can just tell from his... It's on his face for about a good 30 seconds, and you can just tell as the score swells around him that this is a huge revelation and we're going to find out why. But in lesser hands, I don't think I would have felt anything in that moment. I would have been like, come on, what are you being quite pretentious keeping the camera on him for this long?
Yeah.
But the emotion he was conveying, he was like pure emotion.
It's something quite like electric about him. Like when he's in a scene, when he's in a room, even if he's not being quite passive, your attention goes with him. Mm. I mean, it's not a film that necessarily is going to pick up like acting awards, but I thought the casting was pretty great. Robin Wright from House of Cards was awesome.
Brilliant.
So it's so perfect for like that kind of role in that kind of film.
Mm.
The main thing I was thinking about when I'm watching it as well is that, like, as a script, it's kind of whatever. Like, the script is really just a blueprint in the case of that film. And someone else could have adapted that script and it'd been a terrible film. Yeah. Like, easy. You know, so there are some films where the scripts are amazing. All you've really got to do is put a camera in front of the characters and you're away.
Yeah.
But that it could have gone hopelessly wrong, but it's so well done. It's like every single moment in the script has been like realized and thought out to like the nth degree. Like, there's not a single wasted shot where they're like, oh, we'll just do this one, do it outside over there by that tree, we'll do like a two shot, a wide shot, close-ups, boom, we're done on to the next thing. So everything is so well choreographed, and the set dressing and the the CGI in post is just, it's just like a work of art in that sense.
It is. You could really take any shot out of that film, put it on a wall, and yeah. you're staring at it for hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Just thinking, how the hell did I even come
Every
up with
Every time
this?
The scene cut, I was like, oh my God, what like insane vista am I going to be like treated to
And
next?
Isn't that so rare to be excited about the next shot yeah, in a film? Yeah. It's so great. I mean, there are obviously great directors out there working today, but Denis Villeneuve is you know, further proving that he's someone to be super excited about.
Yeah.
It's almost like he kind of sat down with Roger Deakins, cinematographer, and he's like, right, we are going to win you an Oscar. Because he's obviously, he's everyone, everyone's like, he's got to win eventually.
Yeah.
And Denis's like, I'm going to be the one to, as in, he's worked with him before, but this is going to be the film that's going to win you the Oscar. Come on.
Yeah.
This is how we do it.
Director of photography Roger Deakins is like, yeah, he's obviously been instrumental in the film. And
I mean, it's almost like just a pure collab between the two.
Yeah.
You can't really praise one without the other.
I think you definitely need to see it in the IMAX if you're going to go see it. Actually, yes. You guys didn't see it.
I hate being that guy who's like, oh, if you're going to see it in the IMAX. But with this film, like, it. When the score yeah. and the sound design is so good, it really, really does help.
I think it was the colours that astounded me, just the whole, especially the really striking oranges. You know, in the trailer, you see a few of the shots, but there are more kind of hidden in the film that they don't show you before that are just incredible. Like from the off as well, you know, the very first scene, it has these really bright whites and you're just instantly go like, this is amazing, yeah. you know, ready to be blown away by the whole experience. Mm. And I think if you just, I know there have been some people who haven't liked it, and I can kind of understand why, because it is quite slow. But if you just accept that you want to be part of the film and really just sit there and take in all these images, then it's going to be astounding.
Yeah, I could see how if you were watching it on an iPhone on a train, it might not have the same impact, and I could see how you could potentially get a little bit bored or frustrated, but as a cinematic experience, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's pure cinema.
I think the thing that was like unprecedented about it for me as well, and like, I hate to be that guy who reads out his own tweet, but that I tweeted about it after I'd seen the film, was that Blade Runner 2049 is the first film with an $185 million plus budget that isn't either aimed at children or that treats adults like they are.
Mm.
And I thought that, like, after looking back at the list of films by budget, and I mean, I was trolling a little bit, and people obviously did pick me up and were like, well, what about The Dark Knight? What about Mad Max? But really, those two films aside, everything else is the huge, the kind of the Guardians of the Galaxies, the Avengers, all those kinds of films, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm.
And like, we've seen all these vast sums of money kind of not wasted, but, you know, just like frittered away on inconsequential productions. Whereas this time he's like, oh my God, this is like an adult film that wants to be artful.
Mm.
And it has the money to realize what it wants to be. It's not just trying to do it for $2 million at Sundance.
I feel like it represents a different kind of film, or a different kind of blockbuster that, say, Christopher Nolan would offer. In that Christopher Nolan's scripts, I think personally, I know a lot, there's some people who don't, but I think his scripts are brilliant. And I think what sets the Dark Knight trilogy apart from the rest is that it's filled with so many brilliant lines of dialogue delivered so well by the actors, that's what for me, why I revisit those films and love those films, as opposed to the spectacle. Obviously they have great set pieces, but you know, not every shot is as lovingly crafted as Blade Runner is, which I think is different in that you don't really hang on every word. In fact, some of the lines of dialogue are a bit eye-rolling at times, mainly spoken by Jared Leto, who we should probably talk about in a bit. But a lot of his lines of dialogue are quite corny, but you can completely... It's like you can really not even realise it because of how beautiful everything is around them. So it's almost like the antithesis of what Christopher Nolan is doing, in a sense, in that he's got technical prowess, and he's brilliant, but his scripts are better...
Funny that you say that, but
he doesn't really write his own screenplays, so it's different.
But then Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk basically didn't have a script. That was all visual.
A silent film, in a way.
Which just further proves why he is a master in his own right. But
speaking of another day's Nolan, conversation. Obviously, a lot of people loved Dunkirk. I enjoyed it. It's like a front runner in terms of awards and stuff. Do you guys think, which do you think is the better film, Blade Runner 2049 or Dunkirk?
I prefer Blade Runner. I think it has... The thing that was missing from Dunkirk was it didn't really have a heart. Like, I wasn't invested in any of these characters as much. I think because you're following these three storylines, and I think visually it's amazing, and the tension it builds inside of you is incredible. Like, I really enjoyed that film, but it didn't have a heart like other war films have had. You know, looking at something like Saving Private Ryan, and that film has, I think that's just the way Spielberg always does his things. It always has a big heart. And Dunkirk, to me, didn't have that. It just had the tension and the, you know, astounding cinematicness of it.
Yeah. Which is kind of what you enjoy in a Nolan film like Inception or something, but when you're doing a war film, it kind of needs to be there a little bit. I guess as well, like, Dunkirk is an amazing reconstruction. Blade Runner is more like an amazing imagination.
Right, and I think it's always going to be easier to want to immerse yourself in that world, especially when you're taking on the world, you're inheriting a world that Ridley Scott created back in the 80s, and that is why that film is such a seminal classic. Not really because of the story, but because of just the world that he created. So obviously, in one sense, if I had a choice of watching a film tomorrow out of Dunkirk and Blade Runner 2049, I would pick Blade Runner, hands down, probably. But I don't think we should take away from how I felt Dunkirk had a lot of heart. I kind of got a bit misty-eyed in it. Yeah. But
it had it in a different way. Like, there was this scene where the boats came to the shore, and I was kind of welling up there. I was like, this is, you know, which it's proud.
A lot of people
roll
their eyes at that now, don't they? When you talk about it, they're like,
my eyes at that.
Really?
Yeah, and like this like massive fanfare came in. It was like, here comes the Brits. So I was a bit like, yeah.
But then again, you can't really compare the two because they're completely different beasts. And they're...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Still both amazing.
Yeah. I'm excited for everyone to see it as well. I think people are going to love it, even though we've like sat here hyping it and, you know, setting the bar high. I think people are still going to go in and be like, oh shit, it is actually incredible. So
yeah,
that's good.
I can see people not like loving the film, but just appreciating what they've watched. Yeah, I think that's really the main thing, because it deserves appreciation. And I think there's something to be said about films that are just it's such an odd film. Yeah. But the whole time I'm just so intrigued by everything that's going on. And like I say, I didn't really know what was going on. And I'm not really usually like that, but I was just watching transfixed. Just
you could isolate scenes from that out of context and like play them in the Tate Modern as like an art installation, and it just work.
It's a good point.
I mean, half the film isn't an art installation. Watching it, it's just like you could just put that room.
Yeah, these
from
like
that
bodies
set.
Writhing in these like really bizarre chambers. Like, it's cool.
Yeah.
So I guess that brings us on to Denis Villeneuve himself, which I wanted to talk a little bit about because. You know, there are those directors that kind of transcend the level of just being known amongst like niche film circles, who more casual fans and even people who aren't into film will have heard of, like your mum will have heard of Christopher Nolan and Martin Scorsese and people like that. And I kind of feel like maybe he's heading that way.
I think you're right. I think he might be there. I think that he has slipped over into that realm. And I think he's a director that people have been sitting on, in a sense. They felt like they knew, people have known about him, but they couldn't bring him up in conversation because other people won't really know who he is. But I think now, especially thanks to Blade Runner, it's going to be a guy that you just bring up his name, like a Villeneuve film, and people are going to know exactly what you mean by that.
I think the test as well is whether, like, is when people really want to know what they're going to work on next. Mm. It's like they're the... It's not about who's in it. It's like, what's the director's next film? Because he's like bringing the talent to it. And I think after Blade Runner, there will be a lot of interest in like, oh, what's like, what's his next project going to be?
Which we know what it is, I think, right?
Do we?
It's working on remake of Dune.
Yeah. Oh, no
which,
way.
Which I absolutely love in a sense, because do you know what Blade Runner reminded me of in a way? The latest season of Twin Peaks, in that it's so inaccessible.
I thought that as well.
You watched Twin Peaks? Yeah. It's, the season 3 of Twin Peaks was so out there, so inaccessible, but never once did I look at my phone or was I bored. You know, and I do in like, you know, 20-minute sitcoms. But Twin Peaks and Blade Runner, I had no idea what was going on in any of them, and I never once wanted to know what time it was. I wanted to be in that world.
Yeah.
So to see that he's taking on an old
I thought about
David Lynch
as well
film,
while I was in the... Interesting. Knowing, the spice! Melange!
as Let's long see as what you can do with
Patrick
that.
Patrick Stewart is there leading a pug into battle down.
It's funny talking about Denis, because I interviewed director David Frayne, and he's just done his first film called The Cured, and it's a zombie film, and it's really fun. It's playing at LFF. And he said about Denis, I mentioned I was going to see Blade Runner, and he said he's the Justin Bieber of directors at the moment. And I think that's quite a funny analogy, because I don't think he meant it in the way that it was, he's like the new kid on, not necessarily the new kid, but someone who's just suddenly exploded and everyone wants to be him. He's, you know, he's a director's director now. Mm. Everyone's looking at him and what he's doing next. And I think that's been the case since Arrival, which was astounding. You know, that was my favorite film of last year. And then you have Sicario just before that. And now you've got this film Blade Runner. That's three surefire hits in a row.
Yeah.
Of that everyone's praising. Like, if he does it, if Dune's suddenly amazing, and then he takes, I think he's doing Cleopatra as well, or he's in talks.
He's in talks to do that.
You know, if those two films suddenly knock out the park as well, then he's, you know, established himself as one for the history books.
I mean, yeah, I agree. I think the thing that made him stand out to me was after I saw Sicario, which ironically I saw it in the same screen, massive IMAX screen we saw Blade Runner 2 on the other night, and I had this moment of, wow, he's come so far in these 2 years, making, you know, Sicario, Cartoon Man, and now he's making Blade Runner. I'm just in the same old cinema screen watching these films. After that, I was like, I really love this guy, because I think the cinematography and the tension in Sicario is brilliant, and that was one of my favourite films of that year. And then I went away and I watched Enemy, which was this little lo-fi B-movie he did.
Very weird, isn't
it? So odd, but it's basically like... It's basically a mini Arrival in a sense.
Yeah, so for people who haven't seen it, Enemy, like the basis, right, is Jake Gyllenhaal just essentially realizes there's another Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah,
in the world.
He's watching a film and it's an extra in the background and it's basically his doppelganger.
Yeah.
And it's one of them films that I demand everyone go out and watch immediately, because I really, even if you don't want, if you don't like it, I think you'll appreciate it, a bit like Blade Runner, really. And it's got so much weird subtext going on, and it actually ends with what is my favorite penultimate. It's not even the final shot, it's a penultimate shot in probably a film of this decade.
it's
like a film you want to watch with your friends just to see their reaction to.
I wasn't 100% on board with that bit that I'll not name that you're talking about.
Really?
I'll let like listeners make up their own mind on that if they decide to watch it. But
it's balmy.
But I did think, after you, like you were saying with Sicario, it's really exciting when you see a director make a step up and you're like, oh, I didn't know they had that in them. Mm-hmm. It was the same as when after obviously Damien Chazelle coming up the back of Whiplash, which is great, but a very straightforward film.
Yeah.
Then he makes something as like visionary as La La Land, and he's like, damn, like that's a step up. And I guess Blade Runner's the same. I just hope he finds the right scripts, because with all of those movies, with Sicario and with Arrival as well, I thought like the concept and the direction of it was like above the actual script itself. Like Arrival let me down a little bit in that way. And when I watched Sicario, I was like, this looks beautiful. And like, the way when these kind of like police raids have never looked so good, but then actually the film was, I thought, was slightly forgettable.
Right.
So I just, yeah, I hope he chooses the right projects and gets the right people on board.
I think it's impressive just the way he uses his budget. You know, you look at the step up from Arrival to Blade Runner, and those sets in the film are just insane. Mm. Like, there's no other film of that budget. Even, you know, all these Marvel films which have millions and millions thrown at them, and Star Wars and everything. I've never watched a film like that where I've just thought, fuck, that it just looks insane. Like the whole set where they are is crazy. Yeah. It looks, you know, you can imagine that world. It's so real.
There isn't a single just like stock war room or locker room that is just like steel and that's it, is it? Like everything is just nuts.
But
like,
even if it's like a really short scene, it seemed like they'd built this, you know, something massive around it. Like my favorite, I think my favorite set was the one with Harrison Ford where they intro him and it's in the trailer. You kind of, it's a bit orangey and it's, you know, like gambling tables and stuff like that. And it's just, it's
shout out to the lighting team as well, who are not going to get the plaudits they deserve, because the lighting in that film and the way they don't just light a scene, they light a scene and then have it change during it, and characters going in and out of darkness, and like the continuity shit to deal with that is, I'm sure, absolute such a headache but works so well. And just to backtrack again, I think that was the other thing I found. Like, I'm not a big sci-fi guy at all, but having recently, you know, been watching Rogue One, that I thought was pretty bad, to be honest, the new Star Trek, which also was pretty bad, I was kind of losing faith a little bit, and I was like, this is how sci-fi should be.
Yeah, and I think what labels good sci-fi is if someone who doesn't really love sci-fi can watch it and get enjoyment from it. Yeah. Like, I do think Star Wars does that quite well because of the story at its heart, and I think Blade Runner does it perfectly because of the visuals that comprises it.
But I think that the best sci-fi everyone always talks about is what's original, and Blade Runner created a really original world. And then, you know, everyone always looks back on the films from that era and talk about like Alien, Terminator, all those films that they created this amazing world. I think we're really lacking that today, is that there is no sci-fi I can think of from the last few years that has created a world where I'm just like, wow, this is insane. This is something completely out there. Except, and I think it's amazing that somehow with this one, even though it is a sequel, it feels different. And it feels like an evolution of that world. And it was really cool to revisit that, but also see something new. But yeah, it's a shame that we don't have more sci-fi films which are experimenting almost.
And isn't Denis the man to do that?
Yeah,
to bring us a new world, because you look back at Ridley Scott, who is still around making films. I mean, not amazing films anymore, in my opinion. But he did bring, you know, and even James Cameron. I hate to say his name because he isn't my favourite, but he did create worlds that people Avatar, are revisiting now. And Avatar, in a sense, is a new world, you know. But it would be really nice for someone to kind of just carry the baton and create a new world that people are going to be wanting to revisit in another 2 to 3 decades time.
I really hope that Blade Runner is going to bring about this positive change, where like somehow he made that film without anyone at Warner Brothers getting their hands on it and being like, this is fucking jazz nonsense, like we need to like trim this down by 40 minutes, like restructure this so it makes more sense and is more linear. Like, they kind of let him go with it, and I thought that's almost like the Netflix way, isn't it? You know, let the creatives, they know best, let them do it. Maybe, just maybe, we're heading into a period.
The only issue I can see there, I think the big problem, which has perhaps come about recently, would be Mother. And
where it went too far, yeah.
And where it did go too far, where they just went, this guy can have his vision and we'll just let him do what he wants. And I thought that movie was...
But wouldn't you rather that than the safe version? Like, when I was talking to Adam Driver on Kernels a couple of weeks ago, he said, like, you know, when he chooses his roles, some of them might not going to be go like well the way he wants, but they're always going to be interesting failures rather than just like boring okay ones. And it's an interesting failure.
Absolutely. But the only problem I think with Mother, you know, you've got like Jennifer Lawrence in it, who's this massive star, and they've given him like, I think it was like a 50 mil budget. And that kind of budget filmers, there just aren't that many of them being made at the moment. And so I would hate for that to be like a step backwards. But then again, you've got something like It, which is at the top of the box office and has been for weeks and will probably do, you know, it's doing astounding
big
numbers.
Business.
Like, hopefully that will send people, studios the right message that people like originality, even though, you know, everyone's seen it before. But
so, no, I think the minute a studio or anyone has to defend a film, that film, in my mind, just loses like, it's a failure in my mind. And the minute Paramount felt the need to defend Mother, which I haven't seen and I am really excited to see it, I think it completely makes the film kind of just, I don't know, it just falls apart. Like, no one needs to defend a film. If you make a film, there's a reason that film has been made. And that's, even if there's not, just go and enjoy it for yeah. what, you know, it's a new film that you wouldn't have seen. And, you know, unless it's an Adam Sandler comedy on Netflix.
And, like, just let this film speak for itself. Don't put out a statement like you've had, like, an employee do a racist tweet. Like, right? It's a different ballpark.
Yeah, like, the film is a slur that they've made. It's like, no, you released this film. You stand by that
film.
I think I hated that about, like, watching Mother after seeing all these interviews come out and, you know, a couple of things like, oh, Mother's Mother Earth, Mother Nature, and things like that. And it really helps ruin the experience to a degree because you were just thinking the whole time. Like, for me, I thought all the symbology was really on the nose.
Yeah.
And just so
obvious. I really hate that kind of, like, metaphor and symbol stuff. I remember, like, it just comes to mind, like, in the afterword in Lolita by Nabokov, he writes this thing about the response. Obviously, he was absolutely vilified for it. He was called a paedophile and stuff. And he's talking about this, like, reading, these different readings of his book, and how one critic said that when Lolita's playing tennis with someone, how the tennis balls are like testicles that are being batted back and forth. And he's just like, this is bullshit. It's just, they're just playing tennis. It doesn't need to be, like, a really obvious, this is, like, a signifier for this thing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so less of that in film, please, because you don't need to be that basic about it.
Pure basic.
All right, well, we got a little bit off track there, but I think we can all agree that, I mean, Blade Runner's out now, and everyone should try and get down to it if you can.
It's a new Villeneuve film. Go see it.
Lovely time.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Jacob. Thanks, Jack.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
See you in a couple of weeks. I hope you enjoyed our gibberish. If you want to follow us on Twitter, that would be great. We're at Kernels, and we always love to get some feedback. Any questions, any suggestions, hit us up. And yeah, thanks for listening, guys, and see you soon.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.